Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyer's rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Alec Murdaugh is going back to trial at some point, probably next year, maybe the next, who really knows. But there's a lot of things happening in Alec Murdaugh Trial Part 2 that probably didn't happen in Alec Murdaugh Trial Part 1. We're going to discuss all of it, from what the defense is building, what the prosecution is up against, and the third bonus lawsuit that's currently in progress, the civil suit against Becky Hill from Alec Murdaugh. We're going to get into all of it today. Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, is with myself and Robin Drake to break all of it down. Recently, Dick Harpootalian went on TV, basically announced his playbook, said his team is a strategy for the kennel video, the one piece of evidence that really destroyed Alec Murdaugh's alibi the first time. Jim Griffin pointed to unknown male DNA under Maggie Murdaugh's fingernails that was never run through CODIS. They're hiring a new forensic cell phone expert, pushing for venue changes, and they filed that federal lawsuit against Becky Hill. Does it all matter? Is it posturing by the defense to make old news seem new again, or are we truly going to find some new investigative details? That's what we're going to dig in here to today. We're going to start with the defense of Alec Murdaugh before we go over to the prosecution and the Becky Hill suit. Let's start with Dick's statement going on national TV. Said his team is a strategy for the kennel video. That's the one piece of evidence that shattered Alex's alibi the first time. Said he wasn't down there. And then there he is talking on camera. Talking to the dog about the guinea fowl that the dog ate. And oh, what a tangled web we weave, as Alec would say. Bob, how are they going to repackage and represent this to a jury that's going to read differently round two?
Just when I thought I was out.
Yeah, man. Look, here's the deal. I'm actually super fascinated about this trial.
Like, I am too, yeah.
Oddly enough, it's going to be tough. I mean, look, the kennel video is a thing that you don't beat it, right? I mean, it exists. There's no turning back the hands of time. There's no undoing what was said during the first trial, transcripts of every single word that was uttered. So that's all there. And you have Alex admitting that he lied about it. What you do is you reframe what it proves. Mm-hmm. All right. So, like, simply put, you're not going to beat the kennel video. You reframe it in a way that you're saying presence isn't a trigger pull. You know, just because he was there doesn't mean he's the guy who shot them. That's all you can do with it. There is no getting rid of it. It's there. It does what it does. You can hear who you hear. There's no, that wasn't me. You know, like, none of that exists. So best thing they can hope to do with it is reframe it in a way that says, okay, well, you know, there's an axiom in the law. Mere presence is not enough. You need more. And that holds true. So we'll see what they do with it.
And that's true. I mean, but just saying that, you know, it doesn't, it's not going to weigh very well for a jury of it doesn't prove that he did it. True, it doesn't. I can agree. But they're going to want more. They're going to want a story. They're going to want, you know, something beyond, well, you can't prove he pulled the trigger on video. Okay, well, then who did? And if he was there, how do we get there? Are we going to get into a third party culprit type situation, you think?
That's what I was just going to say.
You better start digging.
You better start to try to figure out. I mean, look, there's one fact that is absolute gospel. There are a lot of people that had beef with that guy. You know, the question is, can you narrow it down to the people that he had wronged that were aware of it? That's the key in the whole thing, because a lot of like your typical lawyer that's funneling their clients' funds are constantly coming up with bullshit excuses as to why they haven't dispersed the money, right? I mean, there's always some excuse. So you need to figure out which of his clients, if you're going to start there as a possible third-party culprit, knew that he had the money and he hadn't turned it over. You know, because if they've been fed excuses, most people, you know, they may be suspicious, but they tend to believe what their lawyer is saying to them. So that I don't think that anybody that he was feeding whatever lies he was feeding to all these folks that he was bilking all their money got to the point where they're like, all right, this guy stole my shit. You know, I'm taking care of him, or I'm going to get revenge by killing his wife and his son. You know what I mean?
Because that's my question there then. So why not go after him, and why go after his wife and son, who, especially his wife, you know, had a great reputation of just being a nice person, you know? And so
easy. He's the breadwinner. I mean, you know, like, are you going to, if there's,
because if you want your money repaid,
get your money back, are you going to kill the only person who can bring it in? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, then why not leakage about some sort of letter, some sort of retribution, some sort of path forward for him to not have this happen? I mean, you'd think there'd be more data supporting that this was, again, I'm saying if the defense is going to use this third party because there's retribution against him, then there's got to be more than they're just dead. I mean, there was got to be a path forward for him, you know, kind of like we're talking about in Nancy Guthrie. If the intent is to get money, they got to make it easy to get the money. And there's got to be leakage along that path. And I agree, you know, it's a good strategy to go on third party, but I don't know about the whole, you know, targeting the family.
I mean, like what else, like the other part of it, the other piece, I think that you'd want to focus on if you're the defense is his drug trade activity. You know, yes. I mean, there's no question the guy was dealing. There's no part of me that thinks that he was taking the amount of drugs that Greenwater was putting out there at trial that he was consuming on a monthly basis. There's no way. No human can eat that much drugs. So, you know, was cartel activity involved with this? Was this like I don't know the depths of procurement of the drugs that he was dealing, who he was getting it from, if it was on consignment, meaning he's not fronting the money, but he's getting the drugs, selling the drugs, and then paying for the drug. I don't know any of those questions. Those are things that his defense team would have to dig into if they're looking at that angle. You know, again, at the end of the day, you're still stuck with that same thing. I think it's probably an easier sell to a jury with respect to if you could somehow make a link to the cartel, they're pretty infamous for knocking people's families off. You know what I mean? Like that's an easier sell to get a jury to buy because of the issues that you're talking about, Robin. Like, well, where's the paper trail of the person that's saying, hey, you know, if you don't do this, if I don't get this money, you know, I'm doing this to your family type thing. Where does that exist in the world? Or why didn't he come forward and just say that existed in the world? You know what I mean? At the first trial.
And I guess let's examine that for a second. If they're going to go down the cartel route, what kind of legs that would possibly have and what the prosecution could try and knock out under them. Does this look like a cartel hit? Are there signs that show that it does, Bob?
I mean, it's a little sloppy, but I don't know that every cartel hit is super clean. You know what I mean? Like the level of violence is something that they really try to harp on. That was certainly there, you know.
But what about the weapons? Because they whoever did this supposedly used Murdaugh's actual weapons. I could be wrong. I don't have a stat on this. Maybe there is, but I don't believe.
You know,
how often are the cartels showing up at a residence and using the, you know, the weapons of the homeowner to take out the person, and depending on them to be there and ready and loaded and ammo's ready versus showing up with their own weaponry. That's the part that I think loses me on the cartel end of things. What are your thoughts?
Robin looked that up. I'm sure Robin's on top.
Professional execution style isn't there. it's bottom line for retrial. I just redid it right now, and I looked it up back when we brought this up a number of weeks ago. You have to weave a good story on this one, because whereas there is cartel infiltration in this area in the prison system, I looked up that as well. There, to claim what the defense would have to claim as this being a cartel hit, it would be a blip. In other words, they couldn't say this falls a normal behavior or pattern of the way the hits are done, retribution hits, number of drugs, you know, all those things. It doesn't fit what they would typically do. It would have to be a blip that then prosecution would then say, well, then why this, why this, why this, why this? This doesn't fit, this doesn't fit, this doesn't fit. Because it's a stretch. We think it makes sense because it seems so abhorrent, that number. And Bob, I agree. That number of pills he was claiming to take and the price of them seems like no human being could sustain that. But I looked up this on the science side of it. That is actually plausible, not exactly to the exaggerated amount, but really well within that bounds of human beings, of the tolerance he can build and still be functional at that. Shocked the shit out of me. But according to this research, it is plausible and possible. So it's not, it's possibly, in other words, he was ingesting it and not going for resale of it. I think, though, I agree. I think if they're going to lodge, I'm just telling you, I agree. I don't understand how he could live either.
It was like $90,000 a month or some crazy number.
Was he overpaying? Was he being ripped off? I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe he was just like really stupid with what he was buying.
Yeah, I mean, he's just getting fleeced.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the answer.
He's got that Murdoch money, man. Yeah. We're going to fuck this guy over.
I don't know. I mean, but the thing is with the cartel or something with the drugs.
Let me read it for you.
Okay, go for it.
Up to 60 oxycodone pills per day, he testified, was at the peak of his addiction. Most were 30 milligram pills. That equals 1,800 milligrams of oxycodone per day. Weekly total, 420 pills per week. Typical street price for 30 milligram oxycodone pill, $20 to $40 each. An average of $30 pill, total cost $1,800. Weekly cost $12,600. The $50,000 per week figure, as his lawyer cited, lines up if he was paying premium top end prices or he was buying significantly more pills than he was personally taking. But it's within that realm. So those are the numbers.
It's a lot. I mean, a lot of pills, bro.
No,
he'd probably get the Guinness people interested in a conversation with him.
Which to me seems why you do something stupid like kill your wife and son, because you're so hopped up on that so much shit.
Yeah.
And thinking that is a great way, and you thinking it's a great way to garner sympathy in a fucked up brain so hopped up on oxycodone.
I want to talk about the cartel thing for a second, because it doesn't have to be an all or nothing equation where drugs were involved and this was then cartel. There's plenty of drugged out, doped out dealers in South Carolina's low country on you name it, that are wandering around, have some semblance of organization, that are not the cartel, that probably have access to weapons, maybe know the Murdaughs a bit, maybe have dealt with him, maybe have dealt to him before, that maybe would have access or know where the weapons are on his property. I'm wondering if it is something involving drugs, involving something that did go wrong, something where he didn't pay for them or whatever it may be, not necessarily cartel related, but drug dealer related, gang related, or something of that nature. Somebody that he pissed off to some level involving the drugs and money that came forward. I feel like that could be it. I don't feel like it has to be immediately cartel or nothing.
Right? Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of people that hated that guy.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
Like the boat accident, the clients he's ripping off, potential drugs. Look, there is a bountiful number of people that they could try to dig into in order to get the thing. I've been pretty vocal since the first trial what my theory is. Mm-hmm. But my theory is a true crime theory. It's not a defense theory, because my theory ends up with him as a principal and he's going down as if he pulled the trigger himself.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So like if I'm defending Murdoch, I can't put forth what I think happened here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the defense, I mean, there is ample opportunity, but they're going to have to create some kind of nexus. It can't just be there's got to be some kind of knowledge. There's got to be some kind of existing threat that they're able to kind of prove up. And they're going to have to be able to put somebody in and around that area at the time. You know, I mean, they're going to have some connective tissue. You can't just throw shit out that's got nothing. You know what I mean? You can't just throw out names, in order to, you know, get the jury to squirrel, you know? Look there. You know what I mean? That's not how it works. So, it's going to be an interesting case for a lot of reasons, which I'm sure we're going to get into. But how they're going to go about defending the video again, that's the easiest of the bunch, because that really is a reframing type of thing wherein, you know, it's not implausible to think that he was on the property and he was down there minutes before. Mm-hmm. Especially in my theory. But again, my theory is not the one that, like, the defense could ever employ, because it's basically saying my guy did it. He just didn't pull the trigger.
And I looked up for us both drug dealer retribution, local as well as cartels. Here's what they typically do, and this does not fit the pattern. Typically, they'll do something such as extreme torture, mutilation, public display or bodies left as warnings, narcomantas messages, or symbolic claims of responsibility. So the claim of responsibility would be a big part of it somewhere in there. Weapons were consistent with guns already on the rural property, rifle Maggie, shotgun for ball. Scene lacked the coordinated professional or terror style elements common in cartel hits or local drug dealer hits.
Yep. I mean,
it's impossible. It's a stretch. That'd be the stretch at defense. I mean,
I think that the angle would probably be that the cartel used some local dipshits, you know, that are like low level cartel guys in the States for them.
Yeah.
You know, just a couple of schmucks that are like probably using and dealing, and they're like, go handle this shit. But
yeah, they hired Badger from Breaking Bad. Badger would have handled it. You know, it's the same.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, it kind of might be who knows. Another piece that they're touting here, and it sounds, I mean, it's like, this sounds like this could mean something. This could be something. Unknown male DNA recovered under Maggie Murdaugh's fingernails.
Right.
Never run through CODIS. Now, okay, I don't know why it wouldn't be run through CODIS. That seems like a failing on the part of the investigators. And unknown male DNA under someone's, that sounds spooky. Well, until you look up the stats. Your odds of having someone's unknown DNA underneath your fingernails at any given time in your life, pretty high.
Pretty high.
I would imagine all of us probably have some unknown DNA under our fingernails if we've been out in the ether of our world, or went to a store or picked up products or did anything for any period of time involving where other people go. It's a high number. So
yeah, and plus, dude, look, this wasn't a hand-to-hand combat crime. Like, I saw no evidence presented that Maggie had gotten any kind of defensive wounds on her, or, you know, other than the gunshot wounds. It seemed it was from a distance, you know. So this thing is like, to me, it's just not a thing. You know, it's good for the media if they're trying to go out there and get a narrative out there. But I think that if I remember correctly, you know, they addressed this in the first trial, you know, and SLED had said that they pulled a partial Y chromosome, like YSTR, and that ultimately they didn't have enough loci to load it into CODIS. I think Robin, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you need 20 loci minimum to be listed in CODIS, and they weren't able to pull it from it. So I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what the number is in order to be in CODIS. If it doesn't reach that threshold, you're not going to be in CODIS. Like they have like a threshold minimum that has to be met in order for anybody's or any profile to be listed in CODIS. And I don't think that there was enough there from it. But beyond that, like you were saying, Tony, I mean, you know, the transfer DNA aspect of this, in combination with the fact that it didn't seem that there was any kind of hand-to-hand combat, there was no struggle, you know, with Maggie and whoever did this, if it was Alec or anybody else, you know. So to me, it's a non-starter.
Sounds neat on paper, though.
Yeah,
gets you going, and then it's like, oh, okay. It's clickbaity.
It's total surface level bullshit. You know what I mean? If you like, anybody that's going to look into it at all is going to be like,
yeah, exactly. Your thoughts on the defense of Alec Murdaugh? We're not sitting here saying he's innocent. We're examining it from how what cards do they have to play? And that's I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description or in our live chat as we're doing this right now.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.